Why don't we turn to Psalm 34 this morning, Psalm 34, and we will start with reading God's Word like we've been doing, and we have 22 verses to read, only one page turn this time, Craig, so this is be much easier. Here we go. Psalm 34, if you've got a King James Bible, you might want to read it out of it. If you don't have a King James Bible, it'll be up on the screen. And you got it there, buddy? You ready? Let's stand. And I hope you can read that. I tried to get it all. I squished it all onto like two pages. So I will read the first and the odd numbered verses because I'm so odd. And you all get to read the second and the even numbered verses. Let's read God's Word together. The kids are saying, yeah, right. I heard that. Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. They looked unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil, and thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. All right, you may be seated. We're told up in the title of the psalm, this is a psalm of David, it says, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away, and he departed. It's kind of a little bit of a lengthy note that tells us a little bit about the historical context of this psalm. It mentions when he changed his behavior before Abimelech. Now, Abimelech can at times be a name, but it is also more properly a title. In the Old Testament, you see, like in the book of Genesis, there's a fellow named Abimelech, and he hangs out with Abraham and with Isaac. And it sounds like, wow, this guy must be really old, but this is a title. The title, it's kind of like the title Pharaoh. Abimelech means my father, Abimelech is king. My father is king. And so we think it's being used here as a title. The fellow that he's talking about is a fellow named Achish, who is the king of the city of Gath, of the Philistines. And we'll talk about that story in a minute. this psalm, as we've seen, there was one other we had before. I think it was Psalm 25. This psalm is what we call it's an acrostic. It's kind of like one of those crossword puzzle things. Every letter, every verse starts with a succeeding letter of the alphabet. There's 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. It happens to coincidentally be 22 verses. Now, there's a little bit of a trick at the end, and we'll talk about that when we get to the end. But for the most part, this is an acrostic. So not only was there some kind of design into the writing of this psalm, but it very well could have been that this is like a way of helping people memorize the psalm. Let's see, what's the next verse? What's the next verse? Well, just think of the next letter of the alphabet, and that kind of helps you get started. David says in verse 1, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. God deserves our praise and our gratitude all the time. All the time. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. God deserves our worship, our praise all the time. Even when we don't understand our circumstances, even when we go through tough times, he still is worthy of our praise. Sometimes we are aware of reasons to praise him, but sometimes we aren't. He still deserves our praise. Now, David talks about his praise. In verse 4, he gives us the reason for his praise. And if I was to pick out a key verse for the whole psalm, it's verse 4. Verse 4 is what I think is the center of the whole psalm. This is what the whole psalm is about. David said, I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. Now that's David has a reason for praising the Lord. And this is his reason. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. Kind of a title for the psalm, or a title for this morning's message, is deliverance from fear. And David says, I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and he delivered me from all my fears. I want to bring out a little bit of the background of some of the words. The word which says, I sought the Lord, the word to seek or sought means to resort to frequent a place. It's used to consult someone, to inquire of, to seek. David says, I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and he delivered me from all my fears. The word delivered here, David actually uses lots of different Hebrew words throughout this psalm to talk about God saving him, God delivering him, God rescuing him, God helping him. The word that's used here speaks of to take away, to rescue, to deliver from enemies or troubles, to deliver from death, sin, or guilt. God rescued me. He snatched me away. I sought the Lord. I inquired of God. I sought him out. And he heard me. And he rescued me, snatched me out, delivered me from all my fears. Well, what was David afraid of? David had some very real, very serious fears. Let's look at 1 Samuel 21. And we'll look at the story behind the writing of this psalm. Because we're told this in the title. So this is why we're going to go here. 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 10. 1 Samuel 21, verse 10. Now, to kind of set this up a little bit, David has been running from King Saul. Saul was David's father-in-law. He was David's king. He was his boss. And David's on the run. From the time of David's victory over Goliath, you remember the story, you know, big, giant, little kid, okay? From the time of David's victory over Goliath, Saul began to develop this jealousy toward David. David wasn't just one of these one-shot wonders. He didn't just have, you know, one winning game and then the rest of his life was a failure. It just went up from there. He conquered this giant, but then from that point on, He began to command the armies. He had one victory after another. And every time he'd come home from his victories, he'd come home and everybody would sing. And then they even had one of the top 10 songs in Israel in those days was, "Saul has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s. I mean, everybody loved David. And it really grated on Saul. "You're supposed to love me. I'm your king." Saul became jealous. His jealousy got to the point where he began to plot David's death. Use David for target practice at dinner. They're sitting there eating their tiramisu or something, you know. And he says, "May I have some cafe latte?" And as he's passing, and Saul picks up the spear and throws it at David. And misses. I think he needed glasses or something. He wasn't very good with the spear. David flees. He runs home. And he finds out that Saul has sent secret agents. You know, dun 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 dun. And they're waiting. They try to get David at home. They try to kill him in his bed. But David's a step ahead of them. And David starts fleeing for his life. And it's kind of in this context here in 1 Samuel 21, verse 10, it says, "And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul. And he went to Achish, king of Gath." And so here, we're told right here, one of the things David's afraid of. David's afraid of Saul. He's afraid of people close to him, people who are over him, people he's responsible to. And he's afraid. He's afraid that one day Saul's going to get him. One day the optometrist is going to give Saul the right prescription and he's going to nail me. You know, I can't keep... He's terrified. But it doesn't end there. In verse 11 it says, "And the servants of Achish," this king of Gath, "the servants of Achish said unto him, 'Is not this David the king of the land?'" Now see, they've got that a little wrong. Saul's the king. But David is everybody's favorite. Everybody loves him. If they had democratic elections in Israel, David would have won, hands down. He was the hero. So they said, "Is not this David the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in the dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000? This is the guy that the song's about. And David heard what these people were telling Achish. David laid up these words in his heart and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So David's got, he's got problems at home. His father-in-law's out to kill him. His boss's out to kill him. He runs. He flees to the city of Gath. And then word leaks out who he is. He can't be undercover anymore. And he's terrified of the king of Gath. Now, keep in mind, David's first big victory was against Goliath, who was from Gath. David, what'd you do running to Gath for Pete's sake? To me, I think that was a big mistake. But that's where he is. That's just where he is. And these people are starting to put two and two together, and they realize, this is a guy that creamed us in the World Series. Get the guy! Yeah, we got to get this guy! Now he's terrified there. Verse 13, it says, "And he changed his behavior before them." He started acting differently when he heard what they were saying. "And feigned himself mad in their hands," or he pretended to go crazy. "Then Achish said unto his servants, 'Lo, ye see the man is mad. Wherefore then have ye brought him to me? Have I need of mad men that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?'" Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a verse, didn't I? "He feigned himself mad at their hands, scrabbled on the doors of the gate." That's graffiti. He started scratching stuff, you know. "And he let his spittle fall down upon his beard," the end of verse 13. He starts drooling at the corners of his mouth, and then he starts talking goofy, you know, and he looks like he's going nuts. And so Achish looks at this and says, what are you guys so concerned about? This guy's not a threat. So in order to keep from being killed by the Philistines, David pretends to lose his mind. He acts crazy. He does stupid things. Some have suggested that this was a mistake of David running to the Philistines. Some have considered that it was a lack of faith in fleeing the land of Israel. Maybe, I don't know. He certainly has lots to be afraid of. Everywhere he goes, people are after him. That's what David is afraid of. Talk about fears. What are you afraid of? What are the things that terrify you, that strike terror in your heart? Well, this is Halloween, right? Everything's about fear this week, right? You turn on anything on TV and there's some stupid, scary movie or something, you know. But what terrifies you? What are you afraid of? What are you anxious, worried about? I found a list of the top 10 worst human fears. See how many of these you own. The top fear of all. Top fear of all. Speaking in front of a group. How about that? Is that you? You want to come up here and talk to the rest of everybody? I'm feeling a cold coming on. Here, you. Well, some of you would be great. I could hardly ought to sit down. Speaking in front of a group. Number two is heights. Fear of heights. You get like a little woozy when you're up on a, looking over something. Numbers three, four, and five are all, it was a tie. The next three are insects and bugs, financial problems, and deep water. Don't go into that deep end there. Number six is fear of sickness. Number seven is a fear of death. It's interesting that it's all the way down at seven. Number eight is a fear of flying. Number nine is a fear of loneliness. And number 10, survey says, it's a fear of dogs. No, I don't get that one. I mean, fear of cats, definitely. Just fear of dogs, I don't know. What are you afraid of? What quickens your pulse a little bit? What puts you a little bit in dread? That's what this morning's all about. Deliverance from fears. And David says, if you would memorize anything in this psalm, verse 4 is the thing to memorize. Verse 4 is an answer to worry. It's an answer to fear. David says, I sought the Lord, and He heard me, and He delivered me from all my fears. This is a guy who's been through the other side of this story we just read about him running to Gath and having everybody out against him. And he says, look, I learned something. I sought the Lord, and He heard me, and He delivered me from all my fears. David handled his fears by seeking the Lord. Now, what does it mean to seek the Lord? I read you a little bit of the definition. I kind of like the idea of one of the definitions of to frequent a place. It's kind of like hanging out with God. You know, I sought the Lord. I went to Starbucks, met God at Starbucks. We just kind of hung out for a while. I like that idea. I sought the Lord. God, where are you right now? I want to go meet you for coffee. I like that. I sought the Lord. The word in King James is often translated to inquire, like people asking God for help, for advice. What do I do? I went and I inquired of the Lord. He sought the Lord. For David, it definitely means to pray. It's all about prayer. I sought the Lord. I asked for help, and He heard me. Look at Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Turn to Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Paul writes this. Now, King James, you got to get some of these King James words down. And King James says, "Be careful for nothing." Now, that sounds kind of goofy. Well, just don't be careful about anything. Just, you know, yep, okay, I'll just run into everything. You know, this is not the way how you learn to drive. Be careful for nothing. No, you be very careful. Be very, very. The word careful, the King James word careful, means, if you can flip it around and you'll get the meaning, full of care, full of worry, full of anxiety. The newer translations say, be anxious for nothing. Don't worry about anything. Don't be fearful about anything. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Shall keep your hearts, or shall guard your hearts. The idea of having God's peace stand on guard duty outside of your heart. And saying, I'm not letting anything into this heart. We're protecting this heart. This heart is under the protection of God's peace. Sorry, you ain't worrying this heart. That's a contrast. The peace of God that you can't even, it blows your mind to think about it. Where did this come from? How come I'm okay right now? How come I'm okay? When I think about all these problems I can tick off, how come I'm doing okay? It's because it's God's peace. That's a contrast between God's peace and worrying, anxiety, fear. And Paul says, just like David, look, The thing is prayer. That's how you move from worry to peace. Paul uses three different words here. He says prayer, supplication, and thanksgiving. Prayer, that's a general word. That's, you know, talking to God. Supplication, the word for supplication speaks about specific requests. You got specific problems? Then tell God the specifics. That's requests, supplications. Tell God, tell Him the problem, just not, oh God, help! I mean, that helped, I mean, that worked, that helps. But let's just get into it. I mean, tell Him what you're struggling with. Tell Him what the problem is. And He says, supplication with thanksgiving. I think, personally, this is the key to getting God's peace. Praying with thanksgiving. Now, it doesn't mean you have to wait to the fourth Thursday in November to get God's peace. That's praying at Thanksgiving, not praying with Thanksgiving. I'm dying up here with these jokes. Okay. It's not, oh God, I need my car payment by tomorrow. I thank you that I'm going to get it. Now, that's not what it is either. It's not presuming that God's going to answer your way. To pray with thanksgiving happens when you thank God that He's going to take care of it His way. If you can take the problem and put it in His hands and say, God, I need you to work on this. I need your help on this. And I don't care how you do it or what you do or when you do it. But God, I thank you that you have heard me and I know you're going to do something. That's praying with thanksgiving. And when you can let go of it and put it in His... Now, when you let go of it, does this mean that you just couldn't go back and watch Gilligan's Island on the sofa? No. There's going to be times where you have to get up and go do something. Absolutely. But you don't have to keep worrying about it. You keep putting it back in His hands. David said, I sought the Lord and He heard me. That's where the thanksgiving comes in. to pray with thanksgiving. That's when we move from fear to peace. For some of us, when we face fearful times, we have a knee-jerk response that, we have certain people that we call. We have certain routines, things that we do when I'm scared. You know, the hit the panic button, call up my friend down the street. You know what? That's not bad. That's not bad. But see, God would much rather that your knee-jerk response is to ask Him for help. First, there is absolutely a place for getting counsel and asking friends and talking to people who can help and all. Absolutely, that's a fine thing. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. But beloved, sometimes we got it backwards. And the reason our lives are filled with fear and worry and anxiety is because we're going to God last with it. We're always seeking other people's help first. No, seek God's help first. I wish I would get this down. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like I got this.
Oh yeah, no problem. Throw worry at me. Throw fear. Not a problem. Okay, got him.
I'm so slow to learn this myself. I get overwhelmed with fears and anxieties and all this worry about this and that and oh yeah. But you know what? I do find in my life that when I finally get around to praying about it, all the worry goes away. He says, I sought the Lord and He heard me and He delivered me from all my fears. Now, sometimes that means that the situation will change. God changes the situation. Sometimes the situation doesn't change, but the fear is gone. Because that's what He says. God delivered me from all my fears. And He encourages you that you can do it. Go to Him first. Count on Him first. I remember years ago, a gal that, she would have a problem and she'd call up and there was several of us that and I don't think of this as a bad thing. I considered it an honor that I was on her list of people that she would call when she was in trouble and needed to talk to somebody. And I remember this one time, I think we were like gone on vacation. I think we were like in La Jolla or something. We were gone for the weekend. And so I was totally oblivious to what was going on with this gal. It was an older gal. She had some things going on and her husband was passing away and all kinds of really tough stuff. And we get back from San Diego and lots of messages on our phone machine. And I hit the button, start playing the tapes. And the first one is, oh, Rich, you gotta call me back. Oh, it's horrible. Please, quick. Click. Message two. Oh, Rich, where are you? Oh, it's been a half an hour. Oh, you gotta call. Click. And there was several of these messages. And these were like days old, because we'd been gone for a couple of days. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this is terrible. I feel terrible. And then there's another message that says, oh, you know what? It's okay. God took care of it. And she shared with me later how she went down her list. She called, she had pastors at Costa Mesa. She would call. I got to be on the list. She'd call me and she'd go through everybody and everybody was gone. She couldn't get a hold of anybody. And God spoke to her heart. And said, wait a second. Hello, not everybody's gone. And you know what? I've seen this over and over. Over and over. Where where you know, some of us, we just get into little panic modes and we go into a tailspin and we think, oh my gosh, I can't get a hold of anybody. You know what? There is someone you can get a hold of. And he's on duty 24/7. David said, I sought the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Now, I'll tell you what, some of you could even be sitting here, even right now, this very moment, thinking about all the fears and all the horrible things going on in your life, and you're going, yeah, right, yeah, right. And I would challenge you, yeah, right. You pray. It makes a difference. It's one thing to sit on this side of prayer and say, oh, I don't think that's good. What, do you just go pray and take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning? What's that? Is that what that's all about? No. Don't challenge it. Do it. Cross the line. Pray. Pour out your heart. Seek Him. And you will find the heaviness lifts. Maybe it's only a minute. Maybe it's only two. And maybe it will come back. But then you go back and you seek Him again. This is true. I have found this to be true. Have any of you found this to be true? Yes, it is true. I sought the Lord and He heard me. Here's some great nuggets about some of the saints of old who knew how to pray. A fellow named Robert Murray McShane said this: if I could hear Christ praying for me in the next room, I would not fear a million enemies. Yet, distance makes no difference. He is praying for me. Isn't that a cool thing? It's just, you know, if I could just hear Jesus in next door, if I could just hear Him whisper, Robert, pray for Robert, help Robert. If I could just hear Him, I just, oh yeah, Jesus is praying for me. You know what? It doesn't make a difference that He's in heaven. He is praying for you. He's on your side. J. Hudson Taylor, the great missionary in China, said this: the prayer power has never been tried to its full capacity. If we want to see mighty wonders of divine power and grace wrought in the place of weakness, failure, and disappointment, let us answer God's standing challenge. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not. We just don't take that challenge too seriously. Pray. Pray. Back to Psalm 33. So David says, I sought the Lord and He heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Verse 5, he says, they looked unto Him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. He says they were lightened. The word means to shine, to beam, to burn, to be radiant. It makes me think about Moses. You know the story about when Moses was in the wilderness with the Israelites, and he'd go into the tabernacle to be with God, and he'd come out and he would like glow in the dark. And they go, whoa, what's that, man? And it just kind of freaked the people out because he was glowing from God's presence. I think of when we were in Russia. You remember what the Russian kids were telling us? They were saying, oh, you just look like Americans. And we say, well, what makes us look like Americans? And they said, well, there's two reasons why you look like Americans. Your backpacks, which is really totally bogus, because we saw Russians with backpacks. I did. We were on the bus. I saw Russian kids with backpacks. They said, your backpacks and it's your smiles. Now, I know America enough to know it is not the smiles that makes me an American. It's the smiles because we're Christians. It's that glow of being with Him. You know what? It was hard. I remember that one time they were, the gals were took you in to make pass you off as a Russian. Remember they stomped on your feet to make you stop smiling because you know, Kiki. His smile, I mean, Greg's smile is contagious, you know. They looked unto Him and their faces, they were lightened. That's what happens when you come into God's presence. Spend time in God's presence. Charles H. Spurgeon, this is a great quote, in training young pastors, this is what he said to his students: when you talk about heaven, let your face light up with heavenly glory. When you talk about hell, your everyday face will do. I love that. Oh, well, verse 6, he says, this poor man cried and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. Verse 7, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. It's another great verse. I'll tell you, Psalm 34 is just filled with incredible verses. Who is this angel of the Lord? This phrase, the angel of the Lord, or literally the messenger of Yahweh, the messenger of Yahweh. It's a specific individual. It's a specific Hebrew phrase intended to indicate a specific individual. It's not just, you know, just not angel number 50631 and next time it's 50632. No, it's a specific phrase for a specific individual. He makes many appearances to different people. This phrase is found 58 times in the Old Testament. This is not a two or three times, you know, and the mystery guest, you know, who is this guy? The phrase is 58 times in the Old Testament. Some of the places he appears, I had to cut this down for time-wise, in Genesis 22, he's the guy that appears to Abraham as Abraham was sacrificing Isaac up on the mountain, and he pulls the knife up. Remember, and Abraham had said to his son, you know, because his son said, "Dad, you got the water, you got the wood, you got the knife, you got the fire. Where's the lamb?" And Abraham said, "Oh, God will provide Himself a lamb." But then Isaac probably got to wondering when Dad starts raising the knife to get him. And the angel of the Lord stopped him and said, "Whoa, whoa, 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 that's far enough. That's far enough." The angel of the Lord appeared on Mount Moriah at the time of the sacrifice. In Exodus 3:2, the angel of the Lord is the one who spoke out of the burning bush. He's the one that speaks and calls himself, "I am that I am." In Judges chapter 6, the angel of the Lord is the one that taps Gideon on the shoulder and says, "Hey, bud, I want you. I want to use you." In 1 Chronicles 21, when David was at the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite on Mount Moriah, it's the angel of the Lord that's there. That becomes the place, that's the time where David presents a sacrifice. He buys the threshing floor, and that very place becomes the place of the temple. It happens to be the same place that Abraham and Isaac and Mount Moriah, and it's just too freaky. We believe that this angel of the Lord, the angel of the Lord, is what we would call a theophany, an appearance of God. We believe more specifically, it's Jesus. He is the angel or the messenger of Yahweh. Now, don't confuse that with angels who are created beings. The word angel, both in Hebrew as well as in Greek, the word means a messenger, and it can refer to several people. John the Baptist is the word for angel is used even to describe John the Baptist, but he's just a regular guy. The angel of the Lord, the messenger of Yahweh. We believe it's Jesus. It's Jesus before He took on human flesh in Bethlehem. Verse 7 says, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. It's all about God's help. God helps those who fear him. As we've been reading in our quiet times, those of us that are going through the Bible, we're in the book of Isaiah, and we just reread the story of Hezekiah and the Assyrian invasion. And this is in Isaiah 36 and 37, somewhere around there. And the Assyrians were the big bad bullies on the block. They were the ones that owned the world. They had conquered almost the entire world, and now they're knocking on Hezekiah's doorstep. They've even conquered some of Hezekiah's own cities, and they've got the place surrounded. And Hezekiah calls out the troops to pray. He sends word to Isaiah the prophet and says, "Isaiah, you got to pray, man. We need help. We need God's help." And God sends a word to Isaiah, including in Isaiah 37:35, God says, Hey, Hez, I will defend this city to save it for mine own sake and for my servant David's sake. And the next morning when the people in Jerusalem got up, things were eerily quiet down the street outside the walls. Isaiah 37:36 says, "Then the angel of the Lord," you know who that is, "then the angel of the Lord went forth and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when they rose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses." It was talk about a fearful situation. Talk about a situation of, "I sought the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears." Talk about an example of the angel of the Lord encampeth round about those that fear him and deliver them. And Hezekiah cried out to God, and God said, "You know what? I think we're going to take you out of this thing. I think we're going to take care of this thing." And Jesus went down and took care of it. Sometimes God's rescues are a little more subtle. Maybe it wasn't 185,000 Assyrians laying outside your doorstep. That would be kind of really weird. I think one of my examples I always just think is in my life. I remember back in around 1975 or so, maybe it was 76 or so. I had a red Volkswagen van. You familiar with the old Volkswagen vans? You know, yes. You know, there's cardboard in the front. That's about all between you and people in front of you. Engine's way in the back. You're sitting over the front wheels. You know, it's a very freaky feeling driving a van. And I took a group of folks. We went down to Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa for Bible study on a Thursday morning to see one of Romaine's Bible studies. And we packed seven or eight people in my Volkswagen van, including a couple pastors. And we were down to go see Romaine, go get beat up by Romaine down at Calvary Costa Mesa. And love Pastor Romaine. And he's gone. He's with Jesus right now. And we're driving down the freeway, and we're having a great time talking and fellowshipping, you know. And I'm just, you know, driving my Volkswagen van, you know. And we're going down the 5 and getting into that on-ramp to go onto the 55 south, you know, from the 5, you know. And I'm pulling over, and all of a sudden, it stops. The freeway stops. And I've got a Volkswagen van with 8 people in it. You know what kind of, I mean, with Volkswagen brakes, those things take a lot of time. They take a lot of time to get up to speed. They take a lot of time to slow down. Right? You remember the Volkswagen vans? And I don't know how we did it. I have absolutely no idea. I put my foot on the brake and I'm going, "Oh my gosh, we're not going to stop in time. We're not going to stop in time." And we stopped in time. And I don't know, I don't know, maybe I'm making this up. Maybe I'm just totally making this thing up. But I felt like something like stopped us. I still wonder when I get to heaven, I want to see the bruises on the angels that was like, "Man, what are you doing going on the freeway with this many people in the van? What do you think you're doing? What are you doing, you know? Look at this bruise I got, you know." I still wonder. That's not to say that you can go do stupid things and, you know, jump off of buildings and stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. But God knows how to take care of you when you need it. I know some of us wonder, why didn't he take care of me in this situation? Well, you know what? I don't know the answer to that. But God can. He has the ability. He cares about you. He hasn't forgotten you. Hasn't lost your card. Hasn't lost your phone number. He cares about you. And He camps round about those who fear Him. And He will deliver you when it's right, the right way. Verse 8, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in Him." Oh, just learn, find out how good God is. Just come and taste. Just come and see. Verse 9, "Oh, fear the Lord, ye His saints." Now, verses 9 through 14, he kind of shifts into the subject of fearing the Lord. And he says here, "Oh, fear the Lord, ye His saints, for there is no want or no lack or no need for them that fear Him." In other words, God takes care of the needs of those who fear Him. "Young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing." Verse 11, "Come ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord." This is something he needs to talk about. I gotta rattle your cage a little bit here. I gotta teach you something. I gotta talk about something. I gotta talk about the fear of the Lord. That's an important component in this whole psalm. The fear of the Lord. "Come children, listen to me. I'm gonna teach you the fear of the Lord." What man, and here this is what it means to fear the Lord. This is what results in your life. Verse 12. "What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days that he may see good?" I mean, anybody want to live a good life, a long life? Anybody here? Okay, then pay attention. Here's what he says. This is all about fearing the Lord. "Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile." You don't say stupid stuff. Don't say mean stuff. Don't say deceitful stuff. He says, "Depart from evil," verse 14, "and do good, seek peace, and pursue it." There's a practical sense about fearing the Lord. If you have a healthy fear of the Lord, it changes the way that you live. It changes the way you talk. It changes the way that you act. It's a very, very practical thing. It's kind of interesting, you know, David wasn't talking about being fearful of Saul or the Philistines. He says, you know what you need to do? You need to fear God. You need to fear God. Jesus said in Matthew 10:28, "Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear Him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." Now, he's not talking about Satan. Jesus is talking about God the Father. There's a sense that there's this balance in the Christian life. Yes, we understand how much He loves us, but He's also pretty darn powerful. And He will judge us. And there's a sense I ought to shake a little bit when I'm around Him, when I think of who He is. Verse 15, he says, I was thinking about this when I woke up this morning. He said, "Keep thy tongue from evil, thy lips from speaking guile," deceitful things. Now think about who's writing this. Who wrote this? David. When did he write this? Look at the title. After he changed his behavior from Abimelech and he lied to them about being stupid and crazy and drooling and stuff. Isn't this a little hypocritical of David? No, not yet. Don't think about that yet. Go on. That's from verse 15. "The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and His ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them that from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth and delivereth them out of all their troubles." See, it's the same idea about God delivering us. But now he throws out something. He says, you know what? God hears righteous people. And if you've been following the flow of it, you do righteous things when you fear the Lord. When you fear God, it changes the way you talk. It changes the way that you act. And now David says, you know what? I got news for you. God listens to righteous people. James says, James 5:16, he says, confess your faults to one another, pray for one another that ye may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. A person that's doing the right things. At the same time, the flip side is, if we have a problem with righteousness, if we're doing stupid stuff, if we're living in sin, we're going to have problems with God hearing our prayers. Sometimes husbands do stupid stuff. They don't treat their wives right. In 1 Peter 3:7, Peter says, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Fellows, the way you treat your wife affects your prayer life. Now, isn't that a little scary? Yeah. David wrote in Psalm 66:18, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. If I treasure evil things in my heart, then I can say, oh God, deliver me! And God's going to say, huh? Somebody say something? Now this is all pretty messy, isn't it? It's all very confusing. David says, I cried to the Lord and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. And by the way, I need to talk to you about fearing the Lord. You need to learn to fear the Lord. And when you fear the Lord, it's going to produce righteousness in your life. You're going to start doing the right things. And I got news for you. God hears the prayer of the righteous. The righteous call to God, and God delivers them. And you know, I'm kind of a little uncomfortable about that, David, because I'm not so righteous. And you know what? I kind of have a feeling David would say, yeah, neither was I. Because look what verse 18 says. The Lord is nigh or near unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. See, some of us may be looking at this righteousness thing and go, oh man, I'm never going to do that. God's never going to pay attention to me. Oh, He will, if your heart is broken over your sin. Oh, absolutely, He will hear you. Absolutely. Isaiah records in Isaiah 57:15, Isaiah says, for thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. This is what God says. I dwell in the high and holy place, and with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. See, you read about some of the stuff that David is saying, you know, keep your tongue from evil and don't deceive people and stuff. And I'm thinking, but David, what about you, man? And David goes, yeah, I know. Because I also found that God not only hears the prayers of the righteous, but He's real close to people who are brokenhearted and contrite over their sin. And I think that's exactly where David was. Verse 19, he says, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. There's a promise. All right, we'll claim this promise. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. Doing the right thing, living a life that pleases God, doesn't keep you from going through trouble. Don't count on a trouble-free life. Count on a God who delivers you. That's what you ought to expect. Don't expect a trouble-free life. Expect a God who delivers you. Verse 20. He keepeth all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Now, maybe he's talking about the righteous. He's probably talking about the righteous. They'll never break a bone. Never have a broken bone. How many of you have ever had a broken bone? My goodness. Well, you're not one of them then, that's for sure. I'm not sure David's promising no broken bones. I think there's something more here. I think David has flipped his lid and he's gone into his prophetic mode. The Apostle John records that when the soldiers came to Jesus hanging on the cross and they were told they need to hurry things up so they can bury some dead people today. We need to get these guys off the cross. Well, what they would normally do is they'd go around and break everybody's legs so that the men hanging on the cross would not be able to push themselves up and breathe. They would suffocate to death. Well, they broke the other guys' legs. But when they got to Jesus, he was already dead. And just to prove it, to do their medical examination, you know, the ME's report and all that stuff, they shoved a spear up his side and out came blood and water, which certified that he was dead. Yeah, he's dead. And John says, these things were done that the scriptures should be fulfilled. A bone of him shall not be broken. And what's he quoting from? He's quoting from right here. Jesus is in here. Jesus is in here. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Verse 21, evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. But in contrast, verse 22, the Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. Now, something interesting I found out about this verse. Remember I mentioned at the beginning that this psalm is an acrostic. Every verse is a different letter. Well, there's a little bit of a flaw in that. Between verses 5 and 6, David skips a letter. He pulls something out. He doesn't do one letter after another. He skips a letter between verses 5 and 6. And so actually, he finishes the alphabet in verse 21, not in verse 22. And so when you get to verse 22, you think, wait a minute, what's that doing here? And there's a point to make verse 22 stick out, to draw your attention to it. If you're reading Hebrew, verse 22 is like leaps off the page at you. Like, what's it doing here? And he says, the Lord redeemeth. This is what David wants you to pay attention to. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants. The word redeem means to ransom, to rescue, to deliver. It's the word used in the book of Exodus to describe what God did at the night of the Passover. God decreed this is going to be the thing that was going to get them out of Egypt. And God made a decree that the firstborn of every family would die. The firstborn of every family would die. The angel of death would come through. The firstborn of every family would die unless the family took a lamb, sacrificed it, and put the blood of the lamb on the doorposts of the house. And then the angel of death would see the blood and pass over the house. That son was called a redeemed one. It was purchased. That son's freedom was purchased by the blood of the lamb. That's the word that's used here in Psalm 34, 22. The Lord redeems the souls of his servants. God pays for you. God has bought you. He's paid for you. And none of them that trust in him. The word trust is a word that means to seek refuge, to flee for protection. None of those that have fled to the Lord for protection, he says, will be desolate. The word desolate means to be or become guilty, to be incriminated. See, we've talked about how, you know, David's talking about crying out to the Lord and he hears me, delivers me, and God hears the righteous, and you got to, when you're a righteous person and you fear God, you'd make these changes in your life, and I'm not quite me, but oh, well, and but at least God's close to the brokenhearted. And here's the clincher. I got one last bit of really good news. God pays for, God buys, God takes care of the soul of His servants, the one who run to Him for refuge. No matter what your sin is, He's paid for it. And you will be declared not guilty. So whoever you are, whatever your trouble is, whatever your problem is, run to Him. Seek Him. Pray. Call on Him. You can't use the excuse, well, I'm just no good. You're right, you're no good. I agree. You're no good. But the Father sent a lamb who shed His blood. And if you will run to Him for safety, He will take care of it. He will take care of you. And end with a story that I got in an email. Some of you have read this because some of you got the same story. The little boy visiting his grandparents on their farm. He was given a slingshot to play with in the woods. He practiced in the woods, but he could never hit anything. Getting a little discouraged, he headed back for dinner. As he was walking back, he saw Grandma's pet duck. Just out of impulse, he let the slingshot fly. Hit the duck square in the head and killed it. He was shocked and grieved. In a panic, he hid the dead duck in the wood pile, only to see his sister watching. Sally had seen it all, but she said nothing. After lunch the next day, Grandma said, "Sally, let's wash the dishes." Sally said, "Grandma, Johnny told me he wanted to help in the kitchen." Then she whispered to him, "Remember the duck?" So Johnny did the dishes. Later that day, Grandpa asked if the children wanted to go fishing, and Grandma said, "I'm sorry, but I need Sally to help make supper." Sally just smiled and said, "Well, that's all right, because Johnny told me he wanted to help." And she whispered again, "Remember the duck?" So Sally went fishing, and Johnny stayed to help. After a couple of days of Johnny doing his chores and Sally's, he finally couldn't take it anymore. He came to Grandma, and he confessed that he had killed the duck. Grandma knelt down and gave him a hug and said, "Sweetheart, I know. You see, I was standing at the window, and I saw the whole thing. But because I love you, I forgave you. I was just wondering how long you would let Sally make a slave of you." So, has Satan been beating you up? Remember the duck? Has he made you his slave? And he reminds you all the time of the guilt? You know what? You stop it. The Lord redeems the souls of His servant. And none of those that run to Him for refuge, none of them that trust in Him will be desolate, will be declared guilty. He says, not guilty. He says, I've paid for that. So run to Him. Pour out your heart. Trust Him. Let's stand and pray.